Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 101 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Leonard, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
Fantastic. A little tired. I feel a little worn out, like I've been, you know, debating, but I'm good.
Well, it's not really a debate when you're arguing with someone who has no idea or care about what we're debating. It's just bringing up buzzwords and topics he may have heard elsewhere.
Discussing statues and trophies and stuff.
Right. But we actually have comic books to discuss because we've got ourselves... It's been a busy couple days. It's a busy weekend coming up that we'll mention, of course, in the conventions section, of course. We have a lot of stuff falling out of Free Comic Book Day and out of Civil War to talk about in the news. Not a ton of news currently, a ton of conventions this weekend. A couple bits and babs on sales and books that we read from this past week. Todd read Punisher number 1, but we also have Invincible Iron Man number 9 and Black Widow number 3 to discuss. Also have what
Marvel.
We're most looking forward to coming. What was that?
I said solid Marvel episode.
Yeah, again, it's just right now it's such a weird thing at DC because everything's kind of winding down and it's tough to talk about like, well, yeah, here was the last issue of this book or here's the fifth issue of a miniseries that's been delayed or, you know, what the status of it's going to be in a couple weeks. Who knows? I'm sure once Rebirth starts and everything gets a nice new fresh coat of paint, we'll be talking about things a lot more on the DC side there.
Probably.
And that's just a few weeks away. We have what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. We also have Legends of Tomorrow and Flash from this past week to discuss. As well as our best blank, which was best Megatron. So, yes. Let's get right into it. Again, a lot of the stuff here that we're going to talk about in the news kind of spins out of Free Comic Book Day. How was Free Comic Book Day for you?
Very low key because I walked in 20 minutes before closing. Because you want the inside scoop? I get my free comics on Friday and hide them,
man.
And then go down late and they're never out of anything.
You
but that's just for me
rock.
Because yes, but that's just me because I get to be in the shop after closing when the free comic books come out. So I don't think you'll be able to do that normally. So,
right. So
otherwise,
it was
interesting.
Just,
how was yours?
Okay, it was good. Took the boy. He got some stuff. He bought some stuff. I always like at our local shop when he has the extra register set up. Just because things are that wild and crazy.
He had three registers, didn't he?
I definitely saw the one right when you first walked in.
And then there was two at the counter.
Okay, now see, I couldn't get close enough to the counter to see.
I believe it. It's a swamp there on Free Comic Book Day. But yes, he has three registers running on Free Comic Book Day.
Right, and I was there early. I was there even before our good friend Tom Derenick was there. They were just setting up his table as we were getting ready to leave.
That's because he's an artist, and he's always fashionably late.
Oh, he's the superstar.
Superstar. He megastar. He should be in a Hall of Fame.
He's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
That's right.
So it's always interesting to me to see what kind of moves and what doesn't move, what the publishers put out. And I was very intrigued to see that DC did not have anything out kind of publicizing Rebirth.
I think that has a lot to do with they didn't know who was on what books up until... They didn't even know in the previews. Like, they had to do their own special preview because at the time of previews, they hadn't announced who was in the Rebirth books. They hadn't spun the lottery balls yet, so they didn't know. So, and they had to, put these in Diamond months and months ago. Mm-hmm. So I figured they might have did something that tied in with Suicide Squad more than a reprint of an actual Suicide Squad. I thought maybe they would do like a tie into the movie or something. So yeah, just having reprints as your DC book was kind of weird.
Right, definitely. So I was kind of befuddled by their procedure there. You know, they did have the Superhero Girls book, which I think is digital right now, where it's like, you know, they are giving that a big push, but, you know, for their main line, there was really nothing. Whereas Marvel had two things for their main line. Of course, one, Captain America, because there's a new Captain America book starting very shortly. The Captain America movie in the theaters this weekend. And there was the Civil War number zero, because the other part of the Captain America movie title was Civil War. So, of course, let's get that out there.
Right.
Did you get those books?
I got the Captain America book, the Civil War book, and I also picked up the Doctor Who book.
I picked up two copies of the Doctor Who book.
One for your boy to look at and read and love, and right. The other one to put away mint in the box.
Gem 10 mint condition, or to send out to be CGC'd.
That's right.
But where I was going with this was, so I read the Civil War Zero, and I read the Captain America one. So the Captain America one, you know, was kind of in line with what Nick Spencer is doing on his current Sam Wilson Captain America book, and he's going to be writing the Steve Rogers one as well. Mm-hmm. But Civil War, I was going into a little apprehensively. Only because I was unsure of what sort of... And again, I really can't put my finger on it, but I'm always apprehensive when it comes to, like, the big Marvel events.
Mm-hmm.
And I became more apprehensive about it when I read this preview book to see how involved the Inhumans were in this.
Well, the Inhumans have to be in everything now.
Right, and see, that's... right, and that's an issue, of course, that I have with Civil War. And now the fact that they've just recently added on another, like, preview book for it, or a prequel book, that is about that character that was in Civil War Zero. Ulysses, or whatever it was.
Right.
And they have good creative teams on these books. You know, Bendis is on the main Civil War book. Al Ewing is going to be on this little prequel book. But I don't know, man. Inhumans, I think they need to... What's the term? Fisher cut bait or whatever it is?
Pump the brakes, maybe?
Something with the Inhumans, man. Like, they haven't caught on yet. You've already removed them from your film schedule. And I'm just concerned that this is going to be their last ditch effort. And it's going to adversely affect Civil War.
Right. See, the way I look at it is they're not good Inhumans. They're not bad Inhumans.
Oh, stop.
They're just Inhuman guys. That's all. I mean, nobody cares. I'm sorry. Nobody cares about the Inhumans. Like, they don't fly off the shelf. I think it would be, people would be eating it up with a spoon if it was mutants. But nobody cares about Inhumans. So that's all it is. Like, we've talked about it. It's a substitute for mutants. But, like you said, nobody's taking the bait. No, nobody.
So this is actually making me consider even getting this miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't doing a comic book podcast, I probably wouldn't even pick up the first issue.
Wow.
And the fact that I do a comic book podcast, the first issue is like a $6 book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've noticed that with other books too, not just like for some reason Darth Vader this week is $4.99, and I'm like, why?
Darth Vader's $4.99, like, right?
Right. I'm like, isn't that a $3.99 book? But and now you like these Civil War books, it's like $6.99, and it'll probably be, or is it a $6 book or a $6.99?
It's $5.99.
Okay, because that's what always throws me. People who do the, you know, the $5.99, so it's a $5 book when it's not really. But, you know, you're
if,
like, wow.
If you and then someone who considers $5.99 $5, then they're terrible at math.
Right. No, I know, but it happens a lot.
I call a book that's $3.50 $4.
Mm-hmm. I call it a Tree Fitty book, but
right.
Just but and then you'll get it, and it'll be like a lot of story, and then there'll be pages of how we got here and art that like it's like, oh, this is the, my designer art and stuff like that. I'm like, no, like it shouldn't be a $6 book.
Mm-hmm.
To get in on the ground so floor, there's me. But go ahead.
So sorry. I ask you, are you getting Civil War II?
I'm going to try it. I haven't read the free comic book one yet, so mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to do it. So it hasn't like swerved me one way or the other. But I'll read the free comic book day one. That'll tell me. But I probably will try the one. Like you said, I was going to do it regardless because we have a podcast. But then from there, that's like issue one is all you get. To if you don't thrill me, I'm out.
Yeah. I think I'm in that same boat, too, and I'm only afraid because Bendis is such... and I like Bendis's writing, of course, but when it comes to superhero stuff and when it comes to big event stuff, not a lot happens in that first issue.
In the free comic book one?
No. In when he does an event comic and there's that first issue...
I see what you're saying. I misunderstood.
There's a lot of nothing happening in those books. And then one thing kind of happens at the end, supposedly to grab you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the cat is out of the bag in regards to that. They kind of even tease it in the Zero issue, so we'll see what sort of legs those sort of things have. But I'm very apprehensive. If it wasn't for the price tag, it's now, especially because of the Inhuman involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems as though they tried their best to keep that under wraps. You would think that, like, all the press stuff would have the Inhumans all over it, but no, it's all, like, Avengers versus Avengers.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't understand why you don't like the Inhumans. It's a new cool hip thing.
It's not that I don't like the Inhumans. Every time there is a new Inhuman sort of something, I definitely give it a try.
I have to.
But it never grabs me, man. It just never is just... They're always, like... Got
I'm with you. The only one that ever grabbed me was when they were the Inhuman foreign exchange students,
mm-hmm.
and they went to like college at Empire or whatever it was, and I was like, this one's really good. But otherwise, the Inhumans, I'm like, I just don't care.
Now, I will say this with the caveat, I love Lockjaw.
Well, who doesn't?
Right, and whether it was like Lockjaw and the Pet Avengers, which was its kind of own thing, or the Dan Slott short-lived thing series where Lockjaw was his like sidekick slash pet. Mm-hmm. That's great stuff.
I was reading Howard the Duck this week just because it was the Kevin Maguire mm-hmm. issue, and Daredevil's in it, and he shows up as Matt Murdock, and he's like, what are you doing out? He's like, usually I send my seeing eye dog out, and they're like, you don't have a seeing eye dog. He's like, yes, I do. He goes out and he looks around, and he comes back and tells me. And Chip Zdarsky, I think, is writing the book, and he has a footnote down there. He goes, this is my official. Like, push to get Lockjaw to be Matt Murdock seeing eye dog. And I was like, I would read that book.
That would be a funny book.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and again, you know, unless it's Lockjaw, if Civil War was all about them trying to get Lockjaw on either one of their sides, I'm in.
Everybody needs a teleporter.
Right. Yes. But anyway, Civil War, it's coming up soon. It's coming out, I think, the week before DC Rebirth. But I was going to say, Inhumans work best as, like, a support system to another book, like Fantastic Four or something like that.
Right, right. But they don't produce Fantastic Four anymore.
Right. Well, speaking of which...
Oh, okay.
So one of the things that Marvel gave out alongside their books, and a lot of other comic companies did this, I think IDW had, like, here's a sampler of all the books that are coming out this summer, and, like, all the different trades that we have of all your favorite properties, and so on and so forth. So Marvel had something that came out called Marvel's Greatest Collections,
mm-hmm.
and there was nary a Fantastic Four book in there. except the Fantastic Four stuff that crossed over with the previous Civil War.
And that's because they're producing everything in trade of Civil War, regardless.
Right.
So they can have a big box set.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, Fantastic Four, they just haven't had any great stories ever.
No. You know what? If they just don't have any good villains. And isn't that what a book is, like a hero book is about, is the villains you go up to? If they could just get one really strong villain who, you know, maybe ruled with an iron hand or something like that. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe those Fantastic Four kids will get their stuff together. And hey, speaking of Fantastic Four, I'll mention, you know what, I'm going to include this in the links in the show notes. So the most recent Fantastic Four film is currently on Netflix.
Is it really?
For you to stream at your pleasure. Since Todd and I last summer went to go see Fantastic Four in theaters and did more or less a running commentary of the film, you can go download that old episode from last year, sync up your Netflix, and watch the film all with myself and Todd in the privacy of your own home.
Leonard and Todd sync flicks.
Sync flicks?
Yes. When you sync it up and... What, you're not down with the new idea that I've had for sync flicks?
Careful, you don't want to get sued, do you?
Easy, boy.
It's a picture of a sink with us, like, both vomiting into the sink.
Flicking stuff with our fingers.
Right.
So us sitting in a soapy sink, flicking things.
Somebody get working on that image.
That's right.
But yeah, I'll just so you can find it, I'll include the link to that episode in this week's show notes. So if by some chance, I saw a ton of people that I know and I'm friends with being like, yeah, Fantastic Four is on Netflix, gotta watch it now. And I'm just like, no.
No, you don't.
No, somebody put garbage on my dinner plate, I guess I gotta eat it. No, I have to eat that.
That's right. I have jokes for that I can't do here.
Nope.
But, yeah, I'm with you. I don't know why you'd watch it. And then after, download the episode where we go out and talk about it, go out to Denny's and listen to that. And ask for extra thing sauce.
Say, you know what? It's been almost a year. I wonder if the thing sauce has gone bad.
Oh, I know. I know it's still in my arteries.
It didn't get any better.
That's right. Thing sauce, do your thing.
Ugh. End my life quicker.
That's right. It was so good.
All right. Ugh. So, yeah, there's the link. I have it there. Maybe we'll see a bump in numbers in that episode because of the Netflix.
Oh, that'll put us in weird areas with all the other podcasts.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So this weekend is actually, if you're not going to go watch Netflix Fantastic Four with Todd and I in your ears to do so, there's a bunch of conventions going on this weekend. No less than 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 by my count. There is a comic book convention in Cheyenne, Wyoming, of all places. And they're claiming on their website it is the first ever comic book convention in Wyoming.
That's depressing.
Well, listen, they have a good stable of people that are going to be there. Tony Todd, voice of Zoom, is going to be there. Mark Teixeira, famous artist back in the 90s of many a Ghost Rider cover. If you imagine Ghost Rider in your head, it was probably drawn or painted by Mark Teixeira.
Probably.
Also appearing at that convention is both the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Guitars versus hammers.
Well, there was a time, Todd, and see, this is very... Usually, these days, I poo-poo these wrestlers being named guests at comic book conventions. But there was a time where the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine were a tag team called Rhythm and Blues. Mm-hmm. And Greg the Hammer Valentine was Boxcar Greg Valentine.
Okay.
Oh, boy. So, yes, if you can get... If there is a photo op to get your picture taken with both the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine, and you're in Wyoming, then by all means, you should certainly do that.
That's right.
There's conventions in Spokane, Washington, the Lilac City Comic-Con. There's Toronto and Ottawa both have comic book conventions. The Ottawa one has Billy Dee Williams and Tia Carrera.
Wayne's World.
Right. I wonder if she's going to get a cut of the money since they're using so much of the Wayne's World soundtrack in the upcoming Suicide Squad movie.
Hmm, that is true.
Uh-huh. There is the MSP Comic Con at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. That's probably the biggie of the weekend. Bill Willingham, Dan Juergens, Doug Monkey, just to name a few, are going to be at that one. There is a Motor City Comic Con that I think is in Detroit. And the only reason I say that I think it's in Detroit is because their website doesn't work.
Well, that's usually a plus. That way you can't get confused at where it's not.
Right. So I'm including the link for that one in here. But again, maybe the website will be working by the time the show goes live and I'll be looked at like a fool.
Yes.
Also, there's two in Texas. There's one in Louisville, Texas, that Mike W. Barr and Daryl Banks are going to be at.
Oh, that's cool.
And there's one in Amarillo, Texas. That's called the Yellow City Comic Con. And mm-hmm. I am saddened and depressed that a comic book convention taking place in Amarillo, Texas, does not have Terry Funk appearing at it.
Or at least his grandfather.
Oh, well, his father, Dory Funk Sr., a fantastic wrestler in his own right, is you know, part of the Mortal Coil. His brother, Terry Funk's older brother, Dory Funk Jr.
Wasn't there a Pixar movie about them?
The Funks?
No, about his father. They were trying to find him or something?
No, that's coming out this summer, yes.
Oh, that's right. That's the movie. It's coming out Finding Dory.
That's a great idea. Somebody's leaving money on the table if they don't put together a bunch of Dory Funk Jr., Dory the Fish things. The Dory Fish thing. Also, and most importantly this weekend, is the Scranton Comic Book Convention. At the world-famous Radisson in downtown Scranton. Is that where it is again?
That's where it is,
I don't want to show up at the wrong place. Where both Todd and I are going to be there peddling our wares.
And pushing the podcast.
Right, and pushing the podcast. I'm going to remember to bring the stickers.
I'm going to remember to bring the cards mm-hmm. that promote us.
Right, right. So if you were in the greater Scranton area, want to see what Todd and I look like live and in living color.
Oh,
reaching at you through your podcast machine, daddy. Put your hand on your MP3 player and feel the power of Longbox Heroes. You could come to the Scranton Comic Book Convention and actually lay hands upon Todd and myself.
Oh, there's nothing more than I like than hands on.
That's right, and we'll have a thing of wet naps there just to clean yourself off after you do so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm excited.
I am too.
Yep.
Did you know on the flyer it's promoted as and live podcast?
Again?
Yes.
Why did I think it did not say it this time?
It's on, well, the new flyer. We have the old flyer.
Does that mean we have to do something like that?
You know what? I say recorded podcasts are done live, right? As they're done.
Sure.
We'll just record something when it's, you know, after we set up and we're sitting around, we'll record something.
Right. Now, well, we discuss more in depth about the convention and what we have planned to do for the convention on After Dark this week. And we also had an extra episode this week where Jason Kirk of Podvocacy joined us to discuss Captain America Civil War. So there will be no Captain America Civil War conversation on this show because it took up almost an hour itself. And mm-hmm. we did not want this podcast to be 90 minutes. It's already 90 minutes. It would have been almost 3 hours if the Civil War stuff was in here.
Which would be fantastic. I'm all for three-hour podcasts.
I listened to a five-hour podcast on Monday, and I loved every minute of it.
There's only one nameless podcast that I want that's usually over 2 hours, but that's it.
They talked about the week that was in professional wrestling in 1993, Todd, and I loved every minute of it.
Oh, boy, was there a reason for that, or is it something special to you?
No, it's, it's one of my favorite podcasts. It's called Between the Sheets, where they take whatever that week was, and they pick a year, and they discuss it. And, you know, usually the podcast runs about 2.5, sometimes into 3 hours. But their guest this week is I'd consider him a friend in professional wrestling, a promoter and commentator in his own right, Dave Prazak. And Dave is a wild man. Dave was up late, and Dave Maya had a co-host of the brown whiskey variety.
Oh, boy.
And things were crazy. Let's just say a lot of accusations were made about a lot of people, followed by an uncomfortable silence and the word allegedly.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. But that's one of my favorite podcasts. And like I said, it was 5 hours this week.
So we should do like a five-hour podcast one of these days.
Never going to happen.
We'll do those five-hour energy drinks, one each. And we'll just go till they wear off.
I don't watch the clock when we record. I have a good feel, I think. I like to think of how long we're recording for. And sometimes when I click to end the recording and it's over an hour and a half, and I'm like, what are we doing?
That's right. Well, you are a Time Lord. You know that kind of stuff.
Right. I am a Time Lord. I'm not sure if I should be insulted by that.
You should be honored. It's a great honor.
So yeah, Scranton Comic Book Convention, all those are the comic book conventions. All the links for those will be in the show notes. As I mentioned before, Jason of Podvocacy, he did a solo episode of Podvocacy this past week. Fresher and Parlance were back this week. Fresher discussing his recent trip to Scotland, telling a fantastic story about accidentally filling up his diesel rental car with unleaded fuel.
Oh, boy.
A fantastic story. I was riveted by it. It was great. Prodigal Sons had an episode. Prime Defective was off last week because someone punched Brian in the face.
you went to see Brian?
No, I am actually going to see Brian in a couple of weeks, actually.
Oh, boy.
I promise I will not punch him in his sleep while he's awake.
Okay.
Or punch him in his teeth while he's awake. That's what it is.
I think you shouldn't punch him while he's asleep when he's awake.
So hopefully there's a new Prime Defective this week. Hopefully there's a new Profane Arguments this week. I know there will be a new Puzzle Warriors 3 this week, talking all sorts of shenanigans regarding the gauntlet, regarding scaling. I'm hoping they do live cover openings on the air. But either way, any of these shows, whenever a new one is coming out, you can head over to soontobenamednetwork.com, soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com to find out when the newest episodes are going to be live for your listening pleasure.
Yes.
So there's not a ton of sales this week, nothing really new on the freebie front. They usually wait a couple of weeks to put the free comic book day stuff up. Civil War stuff is on sale until the end of the day today. IDW has their originals on sale for the entire month of May, and then DC has a sale on Darwin Cook stuff. Now, usually they theme these sales around something, and I didn't know Darwin Cook had anything coming out this week or was associated with anything this week.
Either did I.
Right. But it's a weird mix of things. It's essentially everything that he worked on at DC.
Hmm.
So, it's all of New Frontier, it's the first couple issues of Superman Confidential, it's the Before Watchmen stuff that he did, it's the first four issues of the Ed Brubaker Catwoman series, which is really, really good, a Batman Spirit one-shot, a Green Lantern Secret Files, a three-issue arc on Detective Comics, which was also written by Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka. So there's that. And then two random issues of Jonah Hex.
He did two issues of Jonah Hex. One of the best issues of Jonah Hex ever, issue 50,
right,
which ties up a bunch of stuff.
So, again, it's pretty much everything he's worked at DC because it's such random stuff. But I would, you know, at Todd's recommendation, check out that issue of Jonah Hex. Check out the Detective Comics three issues. Check out those first four issues of Catwoman. You know, that's some real good comics, man. That's, you know, a time when DC was super hot, man. There was a lot of good stuff under the radar.
They were firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, yeah, in those early 2000s, man. And, yeah, so check that sales stuff out. And again, all this stuff is in the show notes. So let's get into what we read from this past week, sir. I'm going to let you start, only because I talked for a while here, with Punisher number 1, written by Becky Cloonan, with art by Steve Dillon.
Yes. This is basically a new Punisher number one, which is the story is that there's this police undercovers watching this building, whether or not for drugs, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And they map everything out, and tomorrow morning they're going to go in and take over and, arrest them all. Well, while they're there, the Punisher is also watching them. And in there is his old, one of the people for the drugs is his old commanding officer from one of his groups. And the cops are, before the cops can get there the next day, the Punisher goes in, and it's basically an issue of the Punisher cleaning out these drug people. And the drugs maybe make you a semi-super soldier. So he wants to crack down on that. But what the great part about it is as all this is going on, the commander knows about the Punisher. He knows the Punisher before he was the Punisher in Vietnam or whatever. I don't know where they say what he went to war at this time because his time is moving on. But he says, and I know about the Punisher afterwards. And he describes like the two different ways he was after the incident and everything. And it's really good. If you like a Punisher story, this is it. It's bare bones, a lot of killing, but it seems that we're setting up side characters in the cops who show up later after Punisher has done his thing. And I kind of want to see where it goes because the villain they set up to go after him is a quirky, almost Garth Ennis level villain, but done by Clunan. So I like the way they left it when they show you what his thing is. I don't want to say, but like I said, it's not the greatest Punisher story ever. There's some really great Punisher stories, but it's a really good Punisher story if that's just what you're looking for.
So I always get thrown by this, and by thrown I mean my expectations are set differently when it is a Punisher story with Steve Dillon on art.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Because so much of Garth Ennis' run was done by Steve Dillon. And it's not an intentional thing, but just by seeing his art on a Punisher story, it gets me into that Garth Ennis mindset.
You want to see, like, Ma Nucci and...
Well...
And see him punching polar bears and stuff like that?
Right. Like, Dillon did a Punisher Warzone miniseries that was written by Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Aaron did his best to kind of try to keep it into that tone. It was a spiritual sequel to the Ennis stuff, but it didn't feel right because my mind played the trick on me of like, well, this isn't the Garth Ennis stuff. This is something trying to be like the Garth Ennis stuff, but it wouldn't even have come into my mind if I didn't have that visual, the visual cue of the Steve Dillon art. And that was my biggest thing going into this. I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but did that affect you in any way? Obviously, as you mentioned, this is not the greatest Punisher story, not the best Punisher story, and I'm sure that you would probably say that some of those Steve Dillon, Garth Ennis ones are some of the best.
Right, and some of the I'm trying to remember who did the Slavers story with the female, like the... The white slavery they had like for prostitution and stuff like that. That might be my favorite Punisher story ever, and that was the best. But it wasn't done by Steve Dillon. But I know what you mean because there's a moment where Punisher comes in and he looks like that Steve Dillon. Well, obviously he looks like the Steve Dillon Punisher, but it reminds me of the Garth Ennis. And it took me for a second, but once the story does not have that feel, so my mind was out of it. There was none of that weirdness, so I was able to separate it, is the best way to put it. I know that that's not a good explanation, but I had no problem. I was like, because I'm so distanced from the Garth Ennis Punisher that it's not so fresh in my mind with a lot of that stuff that I can separate it. But I laugh because I always joke, is like, yeah, Steve Dillon doesn't have too many faces, so anything he does always looks alike.
Well, so the other thing I want to ask about this is the Punisher the main character of the story?
For this issue, yes.
Okay, because there was that Rucka run where it was the Punisher, but he was kind of like the thing everybody was talking about in the story, and it was more so about, like, that one specific cop or those cops. And then as the run went on, it kind of tied into a little bit more with the woman who ended up being the Punisher for a little while. So I think a lot of those Punisher stories as well, when Punisher is the main character as opposed to the thing that people are trying to stop, mm-hmm. those work better for me. And obviously there's no superheroes in this either.
At this point, no. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking through it now. It is mostly Punisher throughout the issue. And like I said, it bookends with the undercover... Well, not the undercover, but the cops watching the building. And so, you're obviously, like, he's going to have supporting characters.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think these are what it's going to be. And then there is a crime lord who the people are, the criminals are going up to. So I believe he'll be, like, the running threat for a while, at least. So I think there's more to it than like, you know, like Punisher being the main character.
Gotcha. So, yeah, again, I'm just behind on my books. It's on the pile. I'll eventually get to it.
Mm-hmm. I recommend it.
One of the other books that did move up to the top of the pile was Black Widow number 3. Even though the description on Marvel's website is incorrect, this is by Mark Waid and Chris Somney. Makes me upset when the Marvel official website is incorrect.
Wait a minute, then you're never upset.
So this is a very, you know, this is just a piece of a larger story. Whereas I feel this is a good thing, because I've been reading the book since issue 1, it's a brand new story arc. But if you just pick this issue up, because maybe you saw Captain America Civil War this weekend, and you like Black Widow in it, and you're like, I'm going to go get a Black Widow comic. I think you're probably going to be lost, even though they do that little recap page in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good issue. I'll give you that. The ending is a little interesting, but the thing about this is you're getting small bits of a story. We don't know the full story yet. We know that she's being blackmailed by someone, the Weeping Lion, to steal something from S.H.I.E.L.D.
And we know that he's using a secret,
right.
But we don't know what that secret is either.
Right, and this is the beginning of her trying to find out what that's, you know, to get that information from him to take that power of the secret away. And we get to see a lot of Natasha's upbringing. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not as familiar with this, and I don't know how much this was touched upon in the previous Black Widow run that I know that you liked quite a bit, where she was trying to, like, remove the red from her ledger, as they say.
Right.
Did they get into a lot of her past, specifically as a child, specifically some of the stuff that's touched upon in this issue?
Yes and no. Because I don't know who the one character is in this, because in the run that I read, there was multiple people at the Red Room. So, like, they touched on different ones in her run. This could just be another one, or it could be one that we met already, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know who they're... you know, saying this person is going to be, but it jives with what they were doing, like her, you know, training and the ballet, a little bit of stuff, but it was actually, you know, Murder Incorporated. But yeah, I think it syncs up very well.
So again, it's always interesting to see these bits and pieces of her past and how it's going to tie into what this story is going forward. I worry that this is just going to be, I don't want to say a one and done, but it's just going to be, they're going to tell their 5 to 6 issue story, and then they're not going to be on this for the long haul. I'd like them to.
Mm-hmm. I know what you're saying, but who knows, because he did so long on Daredevil and other books that maybe that they're going to stick around. I don't want to knock on it at all, but I think maybe Samney... If I could see Mark Waid leaving and Samney writing the book and drawing,
gotcha.
That what I would think more of would be like Waid giving him like the bump as a writer, and then leaving. But the thing I like with this is I forgot how much I like when Samney does little things that are different and original. And the scene where she's beating up the thugs, and they've interspliced the ballet as a little girl.
Yes.
It's like the stuff that I've missed when he was on Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
like the weird ways he would convey stuff in the art, I think, you know, he does really well here.
Right. Don't get me wrong. I'm just in kind of a weird headspace regarding this, only because I wish it was a little bit more easily read or accessible. I loved it. It's three issues in. I really like it. I know a lot of people love that first issue, and I wasn't as high on the first issue as a lot of other people were, only because it didn't feel meaty enough.
It did. It felt very action-packed, little dialogue, quickly read.
Right.
I know what you're saying. But you know what? I look back at Wade's Daredevil, and that there was not a lot of jumping on in that either. You know what I mean?
I'll give you that. But it's still early.
Right, but no, you're saying like, I couldn't get in on the, you know, if you just gave this to somebody, it's a tough issue. Most Daredevil issues are like that. They built on what had come before. So, you know, he's an arc builder instead of like, you know, just like one and done stories usually. The only time I saw him do that was, and I liked it, was in S.H.I.E.L.D. When he did his S.H.I.E.L.D. Run recently, every issue could have been, I could have just handed it to you. And you could have read it and went, other than these two little dangling plot things that we see, like clues, it's a one and done. So I like it. I like when he does it both ways.
But yes, definitely check this out. Hopefully, if you're a print person, you either wait for the trade on this one or your store can get all three issues, because I think it'll behoove you to read more of this story.
Mm-hmm.
The last book that we're going to talk about that we read from this past week was Invincible Iron Man number 9. Right. So, this is a continuation of what Bendis has been doing since he took over this book back in September, but in a lot of ways, this is the beginning of a new arc. Mm-hmm. And do not let the giant banner across the top of the page that says Road to Civil War 2 fool you. I'm not really sure how much this ties into Civil War.
I don't think it ties in much at all.
Right. So don't let that fool you. But don't let this fool you that it's not a good story, because it is. And I know Todd is a sucker for Mike Diodato art, so not to say that I'm not. I really like it as well. When, you know, we get the reveal, and it's on the cover there as well. You know, they make their little joke about introducing the new character who doesn't have a hero name, when that armor that's on the cover makes its first appearance in the book. That's a beautiful page.
Mm-hmm.
But so the crux of this issue is that Tony Stark is missing, and everyone is trying to look for him, from James Rhodes to people that he was dealing with in Japan to the woman that he was dating who was working on the Alzheimer's stuff to Doctor Doom. And in addition to Mike Diodato being on the art in this book, I'm sure Todd will agree with me in saying there was a lot of really good Doctor Doom stuff in this issue.
Amazing Doctor Doom stuff in this issue. That might be shocking, spoiler alert, my favorite part of this issue.
So it's still difficult for me to get used to Doctor Doom just being a guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not being in the full Doctor Doom gimmick, brother. not cutting Doctor Doom promos.
You're not digging corporate Doom?
It's not that I'm not digging him. Like, he's still Doom. Like, when a scene is over or he's done saying what he's saying, I'm like, oh, yes, that's Doom. But the Doom I know is the same Doom that you love. Guy in a green cape with a metal face being all bombastic and making all sorts of proclamations and declarations about stuff, cursing the heavens to Reed Richards' name.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of that in here, but it's still very good. It's a really good interpretation of what Dr. Doom is now.
That's right. I call it, like, Demon Doom and Corporate Doom. But yes.
Is his brother the Undertaker, Todd? Is that what you're insinuating?
Yes, I am totally insinuating that. What I like about this too, and especially that Doom scene, is he's just talking to someone, and you're like, you're gonna do the bad decision he's trying to get you to do, and you're totally gonna do it. And I'm not saying, you know, what you're almost doom-like in what you're doing. The end goal is noble. the end goal is totally noble, like Doom always had. I wanna rule the world to bring peace. But the way I'm getting there is usually not so good.
I'm going to have to break a couple eggs. And by a couple eggs, I mean lots and lots of eggs are going to get stomped upon while I get this. Right. But at the end of the day, those eggs that are left, they're going to have a really good life.
That's right. Let me just take a flamethrower to this hatchery.
So Tony Stark is missing. Everyone's looking for him. And then it finds out at the end that he... And again, I don't want to say spoilers. It's, you know, it's not like Tony Stark is dead or anything. But he's disguising himself to infiltrate this group of these techno ninjas.
Yes.
Okay. And it's the people who got the drop on him in the last issue, which they were able to negate and override his controls.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, so far, this is a very poor plan on Tony Stark's part.
What? Tony? Never.
Just by simply having a slightly different face and a different name and setting up a whole story that Tony Stark is missing, I have a feeling that these people are going to figure out that this is Tony Stark very quickly.
No.
Unless this is part of his plan, and then I'll be proven wrong and a fool.
That's right. He's 8 steps ahead of you.
I would like to think that he's 8 steps ahead of me, but Tony Stark more times than not makes the wrong decisions and needs to be told to do the right thing by other people. And when his own devices, he usually makes the wrong choices.
It's almost like if Pepper's not around, things just get uncivil.
Right. And Pepper's not around.
That's right.
But, again, this is really good. You know, I lamented before about Bendis on superhero and crossover stuff, but that's typically, like, team books. On a book like this, where it's a single character, and there's, you know, a supporting cast, of course, Rhodey's in it, Dr. Doom's in it, and stuff like that, they don't all have the same voice. Like, Tony Stark is a different kind of jerk than Dr. Doom is.
Mm-hmm.
They're both jerks in their own special way.
That's right. You don't want to get your jerks just like.
Mm-hmm. So, Iron Man, Invincible Iron Man number 9 was good?
I loved it.
Yes. So, I think that covers what we've read from this past week.
Yes.
Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming up this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link within a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get your books digitally, whether you get your books mailed to you, however you get your books, know what's coming out, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what books are double shipping, know what books change their price, know what books are changing their numbering in a couple weeks when Rebirth happens. Be informed.
That's right.
Todd and I attempt to guess the book the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. As we have done the previous 2 years, I am still in the lead with a correct guess of 13. Todd, right behind me with 11 correct guesses. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I have a feeling there is probably not going to be much movement this week, as I think the book that Todd is most looking forward to coming out this week, I don't even have to click on the link, I think you are most looking forward to coming out is Fix Number 2.
You are correct, sir. I was going to say no and say Southern Bastards just to get a free spot, but I'm going to say...
Then you would be a liar, Todd.
And I have nothing if not my honor.
And if there's one rule in the Longbox Heroes Hall of Fame...
That's
it's
right.
It's no lying.
That is... It's posted, you find out that you're...
It's posted right on the door.
The clubhouse door. The
clubhouse door.
We need a Longbox Heroes clubhouse.
Listen to After Dark this week and you'll find out more about the Longbox Heroes Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I have to guess yours
yes.
now? I'm looking over your list. What could it be? I want to say Harley Quinn and her gang of Harleys too, but I'm going to go with the Fix number 2.
Harley Quinn and her gang of Harleys number 1 was really good. While I am looking forward to number 2, it is not the book I'm most looking forward to coming out. The Fix number 2 is absolutely the book I'm most looking forward to coming out this week.
That's right. The debut of pretzels, hopefully.
The debut of pretzels. And again, it's Nick Spencer, it's Steve Lieber. You know, we've discussed before about their work on Superior Foes of Spider-Man. We discussed the first issue of The Fix when it came out last month. I love the first issue. Can't wait for the second issue.
I've already got a few people to read it already. Just, you know, go giving them a brief description.
Yep.
And, you know, even the fancy gentleman's on board now.
Oh, well.
But he only reads it for pretzels.
His money's tied up in oversized novelty banners.
That's right. I took that photo, by the way, on Game of Thrones.
Oh, I could tell.
You could tell?
I could see your finger, your literal fingerprints all over it.
Uh-huh.
Write that down, please. Your photo shoot with the fancy gentleman.
Okay. Boy.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out some of the other stuff that we have going on over there, whether it be past episodes, episodes of After Dark, our contest in regards to winning a piece of original art by guessing who will play Carol Danvers in the upcoming Captain Marvel movie. We are approximately 2 months away from a possible announcement.
Dun, dun, dun.
So there is still time to get your guesses in.
We just had a guess the other day.
Oh, we did?
In the email.
Oh, I have to update the spreadsheet.
You have to, you know what? Check the email once in a while, Chikarison.
You know what? I get, well, let's not get into that.
Want me to write it down?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say I get very confused by the way the email works on my phone because I'm not a bright person.
Oh, come on. You're at least a 60 water.
I'll give myself 61 just to put myself over the threshold.
Oh, boy.
So, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, as I mentioned, check out all that other stuff. Also, click on our Amazon banner across the top of the page if you need to purchase something. And who doesn't need to purchase something? You can get anything, more or less, from Amazon.com, and every little bit that you buy from them gives us a little advertising fee on the back end. And to steal from another podcast, there's a lot of other giant companies out there, a lot of millionaires who do podcasts that tell you to click on their Amazon banner. They're millionaires. We're not. Say no to those guys.
That's right.
This week, people purchased a baby trend sit and stand stroller.
Ooh.
Somebody also purchased a World Wrestling Entertainment Damian Sandow action figure.
That must have been on clearance.
Oh, boy. Look at you being up on things. And someone also purchased the trades of both Jupiter's Legacy and Jupiter's Circle.
Good books.
And they purchased those in the digital format, I think, because that's how they showed up in the little report that I get. So, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, being that Comixology, the leading digital comics distributor, is now an Amazon company, there is a way, I don't know how to do it, please don't ask, of to connect your Comixology account to your Amazon account, so that you could set it up in a way that when you make your digital comic purchases through Comixology, if you do it through the Amazon link first and set it up with us, then we get a little couple cents on the back end of all of your digital comic purchases.
Which is nice.
Which is very nice. And we appreciate every and all purchases through the Amazon link. It makes us happy and makes us feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So also be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Longbox Heroes. Follow me on Twitter at LF Chikarison. Follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker, as well as his other Twitter accounts, Todd's Art Attack, as well as Hexecutions.
No movement lately.
No movement on either lately. I tacitly mention iTunes. I don't know, you do you when it comes to iTunes. I don't care. I mention it, though. I have to make our corporate overlords happy. They say mention iTunes, so I did.
Wow.
And of course, last but not least for this week's episode would be our best blank. And our best blank this week is Megatron. Optimus Prime himself got his own episode, so why not Megatron? The leader of the Decepticons. The evil robots.
Starscream's the real leader. He just lets Megatron think he is.
Right. So, we had people mostly mention the cartoon, the 80s cartoon, the 80s animated movie. I do want to thank commenter JT Dennis for letting me know the image that I threw in there wasn't an alternate reality Megatron, but from the current comics. I'm out of touch when it comes to Transformers, guys. I apologize. So when I get stuff wrong, let me know. Friend of the show and host of Winter Palace podcast himself, Mark Cole, trying to be funny, mentioning Calvin Johnson, and that's some sort of football reference.
That's right. He's a football player. They call him Megatron. Mm-hmm. I like the kicker for the one team that they call Legatron.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I thought so, too.
So, again, thank you to everyone who contributed to this one. But I do want to say, I'm in agreement with Todd. I don't like Megatron. I think Megatron, at best, is fourth best of the Decepticons.
Mm-hmm.
I say Starscream is the true leader of the Decepticons as well. And he just allows Megatron to believe that he himself is the leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think Soundwave is better. And I think Devastator, all the Constructicons together, are better than Megatron.
Wow.
That's right.
Fourth tier.
Like I said, I think Megatron is overrated, but it was requested, so he was mentioned.
Wow, Barry and Megatron.
That's right.
I'm with you, but I'm going to pick a favorite Megatron anyway. Mm-hmm. It's the one that Starscream throws out of Astro Train right. In the movie.
Kicks him out and then immediately puts on a crown.
That's right. I still function.
Oh, man. So, thank you everyone who contributed to posting something, tweeting at us, emailing us, however you let us know what your favorite Megatron is. Next week, we're going to be talking about the best Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Aquaman gets a short shrift, I think. Mm-hmm. But there have been a couple interpretations outside of comic books of Aquaman and cartoons and animated series. And I think he was peeking out. I could have swore I saw his beautiful eyes in Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice.
My favorite joke I saw on Twitter was somebody saying, I don't know why Marvel didn't go with Black Panther and some of the other heroes. Why didn't you go the same route as they did in Superman v. Batman and introduce them in an email attachment?
Oh, boy. So next week's best blank is going to be best Aquaman.
A lot of people think that character's all wet.
Oh, boy. And this Aquaman. After you just read an issue of The Punisher.
Yes, mm-hmm. you're catching on. This guy gets it.
Yeah.
Trademark.
Get something. So that does cover everything except for TV talk, which we do save for the end of the episode so that we don't,
right.
Make people sad or something.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a few second break here before we get a discussion of last week's episode of The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. And we'll be right back into things here in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Flash was last week. And, again, I watched Flash almost immediately when it happened. I know you watched it a little bit late, and I watched it earlier than I typically do.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode was continuing the plot that ended the previous week's episode where Wells is like, yeah, Barry, we can get your speed back. All we gotta do is recreate the particle accelerator explosion. No fuss, no muss, and we're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
So then, obviously, there's a lot of him and Han back and forth with everyone in regards to that. Barry's father shows up, Henry Allen, to voice his displeasure with this decision. Also, Cisco finds out that his brother is an Earth 2 villain who's now coming through because of what Zoom is up to. His plan, of course, to take over Earth 1, because now, instead of killing people, he's just going to take over all these different realities.
Mm-hmm. And we also find out what Barry's father's mother's maiden name was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, in just a throwaway line. Like, no one, like...
What?
Jay Garrick is a huge part. The name Jay Garrick is a huge part of this entire season. He says, oh, that was my mother's maiden name. And Barry does not bat an eye. He does not stop. He does not anything else. If I heard the name, I'm like, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And I'm not living this like they are. I'm just a bystander. I'm watching it from a distance.
Well, now we know why Barry's father had to go away for a while. It helped the plot.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that's going to be... I don't know why. I'm just going out on a limb and saying that that might be very important in the near future.
Okay.
I don't know. That was just weird. And I like the way Barry was telling him the story about Jay. He's like, yeah, so anyway, Jay Garrick and blah, blah, blah. Hunter Zolomon, and he's like, is really Jay Garrick. He's like, what? He's like, oh yeah, that's right. You've been living in a cabin where no one has been talking to you. And I'm telling you this story like you have full knowledge of what I'm talking about.
Oh man.
I don't know. That was a weird scene. That was a very tough scene for me to watch.
Okay. Because it wasn't good or?
It wasn't good. I thought it was like Barry, like, it wasn't written well. It wasn't that it was badly acted, but because, like I said, it was like he's just telling the story. Like, if I knew you hadn't been around for 2 months, I wouldn't just start telling you a story like you knew every nuance of it. Like, especially when you're telling someone, oh, I found out this person's name really wasn't their name, and you don't know anything about it. I'd be like, yeah, did you know Hunter Zolomon wasn't really Hunter Zolomon? Who's Hunter Zolomon?
Right, like, Barry, what are you talking about?
Exactly. And that's what the father kind of does. And I'm like, all right, just, I understand what you're doing here. Let's get through this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes back with them and, you know, I do at least like that the build-up, it was like everybody was against doing the whole...
Particle accelerator explosion.
Right, but at least there's a logical progression of how things get systematically worse. And, like, Zoom amps things up. And it's like, Barry really doesn't have a choice by the end of it if he wants to save people.
Right.
So it wasn't like, oh, like, as we're sitting here, like, this is a terrible idea. By the end, I was like, really? That's your only choice?
It's still a terrible idea, but it is their only choice.
Right. It's the least worst terrible idea.
But again, I didn't dislike that scene as much as you did.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing, I like the episode, you know, we're ramping up here to the end of the season. And just as a pulling back the curtain sort of thing. So when I, do our notes for the show, I always have links to IMDb for whatever TV shows or movies or whatever it is that we're talking about. And IMDb has like all the promotional photos or the photos that are taken while the show was being shot, right?
Production shots.
There you go. And they're always in a much different light. And by a much different light, a much better light, where you can actually see the detail on so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so much cooler, the production shots. Which kind of puts things into perspective. Like when we watched Supergirl a couple weeks ago, when that crossed over with Flash, and Livewire and Silver Banshee were in their costumes in the light of day, and you could see how awesome they were.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, on the show, like that, what was it, Rapture, whatever his name was?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, eh, you know, he looks all right.
Yep, he looks like a laser tag villain.
Right, but the production shots of his costume look awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So, that's all.
And one thing that I actually did like was when they were in jitters, when Zoom finds out that the cops have, because he kicks them out of the precinct.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, we'll go over to Jitters and we'll plan our attack and everything. And they find out that Zoom is, and Caitlin calls out that Zoom is going over to Jitters. And they get over there and he just snaps everybody's neck at the same time. And they all fall. I was like, that was one of the creepiest scenes I've ever seen. Like in a comic book TV show. Where he just does it all at super speed, snaps all their necks, and they're all standing there holding the guns, and they all just drop at once.
Mm.
I was like, All right, I give you credit for that. That was pretty cool.
But it was still a good issue, good episode.
Yeah. Yes.
Secondly, of course, more recently, we have the third to last episode of Legends of Tomorrow to discuss.
Yes.
So I think we talked about it last week, where last week, this week, and the next two episodes are more or less like a four-part season finale.
Mm-hmm.
They're all kind of interconnected, and with that knowledge coming into it after watching last week's episode, I'm like, okay, last week was the Star Wars of this. This week, the one that we're going to be talking about, is The Empire Strikes Back. Next week will be Return of the Jedi, and then the following week will be the wrap-up of everything.
Or the prequels.
I'm thinking it'll be the wrap-up of everything. And that was my thought process going into the episode, and I would say I was probably right in that thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because this episode begins with they had captured Vandal Savage, they have him locked up, and they're debating whether or not they are going to kill him or not, and then there's problems with the Wave Rider, Jackson goes and fixes that, and then something with whatever, how the Wave Rider works, it starts aging Jackson's insides prematurely, and then everyone gets their one-on-one shot, or more or less everybody gets their one-on-one shot with Vandal Savage, where Vandal Savage tries to turn them against the rest of the crew. Mainly with the crux being trying to convince Ray Palmer that if they help free Carter, then Kendra will no longer be with him, and then to everybody else that Rip Hunter will sell you all down the river to save his family, which is inherently true.
Right. He kind of almost does it with Jay.
Right.
Or Jax, or whatever they call him. But I thought it was an interesting episode. I like the fact... I think it's cool to see, at least finally, even though it's kind of... You know, I wouldn't be going to talk to the prisoner every 2 minutes to see people interact with Savage, because this was probably the most we got of Savage in an episode, and I think he's really great as a character, but the situation wasn't ideal because I'm kind of like, somebody go in there and smack him in the head with that mace.
Right.
But
there was too much him and Han with this, and I think... I forget who says it when Martin Stein is like, are we really just going to kill him? And they're like, that was what our plan was. That's what we've been trying to do essentially for these last like 14 episodes, is to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But then, sorry.
I was saying, now we have him, but the only reason we don't want it is because Kendra wants Carter back. And then that's going to hurt poor Ray. And just one episode, he had a really big heart, so... You know, because he was giant,
right.
But that's going to break. I was like,
oh. It was a giant CGI heart.
That's right.
That he kept in a jar on his desk, apparently. But, like I said, going in, if you look at this episode as The Empire Strikes Back of the finale of this, I liked it quite a bit. I liked seeing as much as Vandal Savage. I think he did have really good interplay with the characters. Granted, as you mentioned, they shouldn't have just kept going in and talking to him. Over and over again, they should have just left him alone, not let him know what their plan is, not give him the opportunity to escape like he does, and get the drop on everybody. So they finally get him back in, they get him to the Time Masters, and then it's revealed that the Time Masters have been working with him the whole time, and Rip has been following up their plans. He was supposed to be killing everyone in 2166.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of our people are captured or about to be killed. They're on the they're at the vanishing point, and things look bleakest for our heroes.
Right. And Captain Cold should have listened to that feeling. That whole episode, he's like, I have a feeling, and you're like, yep. And why aren't snacks don't have any sugar in them in the future? That was my favorite scene, was Heatwave eating snacks in the Wave Rider.
Yes.
And just spitting them out in, like, the most, like, ridiculous way possible.
I did like them swinging the whiskey, or whatever it was they were drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one line in particular of Captain Cold. Every line that Captain Cold has had on Legends of Tomorrow or Flash had been fantastic. All because of Wentworth Miller's tremendous delivery. But they were in a firefight, and he makes some sort of reference about him being the guy who robs ATMs.
Yes, he's like, I'm Vandal Savage, like the blah 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 of time. The Butcher is like, yeah, and I'm, you know, Captain Cole. I rob ATMs.
The delivery of the line, and I felt the line was just a like that was the first time that I'm just like, nah, I think they might be. I don't think Captain Cold should have said that. I didn't like that line. I didn't like the delivery. I didn't like the line.
But he's not captured, so he is. He's one of the few on the run with Sarah.
Yeah. Because he is the lead character of the show. So I'll give you that.
That's right. And Heatwave got drunk. If he wasn't drunk and told he was under arrest, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that.
If I had a dime for every time I was arrested, I'd have zero dimes.
Okay, Enzo.
Is that what he would have said?
Yeah.
No, but I've been enjoying, you know, there was an episode or two where it wasn't the best, but, you know, this essential four-part season finale, I like the first two parts. I'm excited to see how the how these Duke Legends of Tomorrow boys get out of this one.
And Ray shouldn't be opening cells. That's all I'm going to say. I did like to see Ray clock him one.
Mm.
But, yeah, you shouldn't open the cell. Ray.
Oh, and we're going to... So, I was discussing this with my wife because she did not get a chance to see this because she likes to sleep and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I was explaining to her what happened and she's like, oh, well, after these episodes, it's done. I'm like, no, there's going to be a second season. And some of these characters will be returning and some of them won't. Mm-hmm. Or it might just be a whole new cast altogether. We don't know. But, as I mentioned before, so Jax, when he fixed the engine of the Wave Rider, something happened to him, caused him to start getting old. Martin Stein sends him back to 2016, so he'll be able to live, and he's on their little jump ship. He escapes. On their only way that they had to get out, he's gone. Right. I have a feeling that he is going to be bringing in whatever random heroes we'll be seeing in Season 2 of Legends of Tomorrow in their first appearance as the cavalry coming to save the day.
That's probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good plan. And I was wondering, were you lost during some of the flashbacks because they were Arrow-centric?
Oh, with Felicity Smoak and...
Nyssa Talia? Or Nyssa Agul?
Yeah, you know what? I knew enough that I wasn't completely lost.
I was just curious because I know where their stories were at that point.
Right.
Like, I knew why Nyssa was in Nanda Parbat jail. And you know what I mean? Like, so I just was curious how thrown you were by it.
Yeah, you know, I was able to figure out the gist of what they were trying to get across.
Gotcha.
So with that, is there anything else that we need to cover?
No, I think we're good.
All right, so... closing out episode 101 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Leonard, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!